Hey guys, it's Scott Brennan here, and before we get to this week's episode of this podcast, I want to tell you a little bit about the sponsors. I'm actually sitting outside right now. It's gorgeous, so if you hear a little wind, that's why. But let's start with Demented Brewing. Demented Brewing is a brewery located in Middlesex, New Jersey, right off 287 there. It's just a great setup. They have 16 taps in their tasting room. Awesome, like murals and things like that. Just delicious beer. They got bottle programs, and the place is just improving more and more and more. They just celebrated their one-year anniversary last Sunday, and they released Prominence, okay? Their Flanders Red Aged... it's a Flanders Red aged in Cabernet barrels. This Sunday coming up, they're going to release a Mosaic Wheat to finish off their summer lineup. So get down to Demented Brewing. Go to dementedbrewing.com or give them a like on Facebook and Instagram and all that fun stuff. So I highly recommend them. You guys heard me talk about Manskirt if you listened to last week's episode. Manskirt Brewing, located in Hackettstown, New Jersey, in an old bank building. Just an awesome little brewery. Again, they are coming up on their one-year anniversary. So a lot of good stuff happening in New Jersey. If you go to www.manskirtbrewing, get more information. They got their Kilt Fest coming up on the 10th. They just finished Pleated Wheat in collaboration with Hefeweizen with Two Ton Brewing. Okay, so that should be on tap later this week. So good stuff coming out of Manskirt Brewing. And if you haven't listened to the episode last week, Wolf Nation, WULF, clothing apparel company. For those of you who are just looking to get out and do your own thing, okay, stop living paycheck to paycheck. Be a wolf, okay? That's WULF. Wake up, live free. Check them out on Instagram, Twitter, all that fun stuff. A lot of different clothing coming out by them, so support them and order a shirt, would ya? And finally, Trivia Revolution. Trivia Revolution, fueled by craft beer. Trivia Revolution is a trivia company that basically every week gives away prizes to different breweries, sponsored breweries. We're also going to be doing bus trips. So go check them out. Each week there's a bonus item that you could use, okay, to get 5 points. You could also be a New Jersey craft beer member, get points. And we give actual prizes out to the restaurants. So it's a fun night, even if you're last and you're not the smartest guy in the room, like myself. you can win prizes. Trivia Revolution, fueled by craft beer. All right, here's an episode where we go to the Adirondack Brewery. It's me by myself. I'm actually on vacation. During the episode, I go and stop by my favorite brewery, which is Adirondack Brewery, located in Lake George, New York. So check it out. Really fun interview. Hashtag free the moose.
Hey, this is Michelangelo, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle here, to let you know that you're listening to Verbal Shenanigans. Oh, that's like because they're shenanigan-y and they're verbal.
But our shenanigans are cheeky and fun.
Yeah, I mean, his shenanigans are cruel and tragic.
Which makes them not shenanigans at all, really.
Evil shenanigans.
I swear to God, I'll pistol whip the next guy that says shenanigans.
All right, it's Scott Brennan here. I'm solo today. I'm partnerless. It's because I am on vacation with 40 of my crazy family members up here in Brant Lake, New Jersey. I'm sitting in the Adirondack Brewery, someplace I've been, I don't know, probably 30, 40 times, something like that. It happens to be my favorite brewery to visit, like to be at. And I'm sitting here with the owner, Mr. John Carr. Welcome to Verbal Shenanigans. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing great. It's an honor to be on.
That's awesome. First off, we're in a room that I never knew existed, which is called your barrel room here, which is pretty cool. We're surrounded by everything you could think Adirondack, basically. We got fish, we got stumps, we got pine cones, antlers. So, you know,
bobcats.
Feel right at home here. But also, you are excited to be on our blog today. You call me a blogger.
Blogger. I did call him a blogger.
It hurt.
I'm learning. I'm old.
It hurt right here.
I'm learning.
It hurt my heart. It's like the same thing I tell my dad. Like, hey, I got this guy on the podcast. He's like, the what? Like, what's that? Like, what station is it on? You know, like, I'm like, well,
It's a pot of what?
We gotta work with him. You know, work with him a little bit. But anyway, thanks for having me out, and I'm happy to be drinking the Hoppy Red Ale, which is one of my favorites. I'm big fan of this one. First off, how long has this brewery been in action here?
We opened up. I started planning this brewery in 1997, which was kind of a fun time, or you know, different time in craft beer than what we have today. You know, the crazy part was, you know, I went out. I didn't have a lot of money. You know, I was going to build a lot of it myself, and I went out to three different banks, and all three of them said the same thing:
nope.
"John, you know what? We love your enthusiasm, but quite honestly, craft beer is a passing fad." And, of course, all three of them denied me. And I still, to this day, 17 years later, I kind of wonder, like, whatever happened to those banks? You know, whatever happened to those bankers? And, you know, I think all three of those banks are out of business, and I don't know what those three bankers are doing. But, you know, I don't think they predicted that consumers just love good taste in beer. And that's something that I'm really loving right now, that customers and, you know, our fans are really into not only what we're doing, but our whole industry is cranking out some, you know, really amazing beer right now.
Yeah, I mean, it's cool to see you guys. I feel like you're like my cousin that I see once a year, because like I saw you when you were just the building, and then you put the expansion on, and then I read your little newsletter and the things that are coming on, which we'll get to in a little bit. But even just the beers that you guys are putting out, it was like. I don't know. I noticed it all. Like, the labels have changed. It seems like everything is getting, I don't know, either bigger and more. I see you're making a whole lot more experimental beers, or more beers that are coming out, because that is also really the demand, too. Beer lovers love coming back to try what's next, you know, try what's not. Like, in Jersey, I think we had 11 craft breweries pop up this year, since January, which is awesome. So now Jersey's like up to 50 something craft breweries, and it's just awesome. You always think of California and Vermont, you know, but Jersey's catching everywhere. You know, everywhere you go, it seems to be that they are popping up everywhere. And you guys have you said you started in 97. Would you lose your beer?
I opened. we opened in 97. There were like, I don't know, man, 38 breweries in the state or something at the time.
New York's big too.
And it was funny because we all kind of knew each other, and we were like we'd ping each other a little bit. Hey, are you still open? Yeah, I am. How you doing? Hey, you know, and we all, it was like a pretty quiet group, and some really, really great guys, and a lot of them are growing, you know, like we are. And what's kind of fun now is New York State, you know, the state government has sort of figured out that, you know, breweries are good for small towns, they're good for local economies. Not only are they good paying jobs, but, you know, local people are into it. It's exciting. And, you know, instead of beer from somewhere else, which there's, Lord knows there's enough of that coming into our state right now. You know, the state government said, let's make this easier. Let's figure it out.
Jersey,
you know,
they did put something really similar, like,
yeah,
the last two or three years.
And it really is good. And right now, you know, New York State's got this crazy amount of breweries opening. There's one opening every other day currently.
Awesome.
I'm not sure if it's always sustainable, but yeah, you know, I guess as a beer consumer, it's fantastic. You drive a mile this way, there's a one that opened yesterday. You drive a mile that way, there's one opening tomorrow. And if you're a beer consumer, it's fantastic. You know, the state's also working with trying to improve quality of beer, and also with the amount of farmland in upstate New York, they're doing a ton of work through Cornell for hops. New York State at one time was the largest hop grower in the world. We had over 40,000 acres of hops growing.
Right.
And now we've got about 300, 350 acres, and it's growing each year.
Now, do you find yourself in any, like, the hop shortage things? Like, I read a lot about that. Like, people come and buy out bulks of hop farms and stuff like that.
Some of that. I think it's more of an allocation problem. I might have too much Cascade, and the guy down the road, you know, needs it. Or
right.
I may need some El Dorado, and a guy in Minnesota's got it. So I think, you know, the growers have been producing more, you know, which has been helping a lot. You know, prices are still high.
Right.
But, you know, the farmers are producing it. We're the system's working well, so doing good with the hop stuff.
Now, when you opened this place, was it always –
brew pub, or was it a brewery first and then the food came, or was it both together?
Great question. We opened kind of, our building is kind of long and narrow, so we opened in the front with the brew pub, and in the back with a production facility with a 20-barrel brew house, 20-barrel fermenters, with the idea that we were going to grow. And even the room we're in upstairs here, this was part of our plan in 99. You know, unfortunately, when we opened in 1999, you know, there weren't that many beer lovers. You know, the distributors weren't really embracing local craft. And in the last 5 years, that's changed a lot, which has allowed us to kind of fulfill the plan that we started with 17 years ago. And so that's exciting for us to kind of see what's happening. I'm a big believer in having a food component with beer. And, you know, a lot of my friends don't want to deal with food, and right. I get it. But mm-hmm. You got to admit, you know, some ribs and a good IPA, or, you know, or bare naked, you know, with a burger, it's just a great combination.
Yeah, absolutely. So were you a home brewer before this? And if so, also, what did you do before you got into the brewery world as for a living?
Yeah, I went to college in New Hampshire for engineering, and, you know, love the engineering degree. Brewing beer is a little more sexy, a little more fun.
Awesome.
And I lived in Europe for a couple of years, fell in love with beer, came back to the U.S., and I either couldn't find or couldn't afford some of these crazy beers that I had in Europe. And so I thought, geez, I wonder if I can make this stuff. And so that's exactly what I did. And went out, tried to figure it out. That was in 1988. And homebrewing had only been legal in the United States for about 8 years. There were no homebrew stores.
Yep.
There were no internet. There was no nothing. I had to kind of like really bootstrap it and kind of figure it out with ingredients I could find. There were a few companies you could mail off to, and 6 weeks later you'd get a can of malt extract from them. And now you get the internet.
I had a few of those. I think that's how everyone starts. They get the Mr. Beer kit and
kind
of work your way through.
Yeah, well, I
make lots of mistakes.
Yeah, I predate the kit. It was like there was no kit at that time. It was like, really, you want to brew beer? Why don't you make wine instead? So hacked my way through it. And then, my fiance, now wife, Cindy, who runs all the finances for the company, was, Lake George was her hometown. And, you know, we were like, God, what a gorgeous spot Lake George is, and the Adirondacks, and why not come here and do it?
That was kind of like leading my next question was, like, were you an Adirondack? I guess you weren't a native, but did you visit the area a lot? Like, because obviously a very smart decision to customize the brewery to the region. Like, you come in here, you feel like it belongs here, you know? You, like I said before, you got the fish, the logs, the wood table, wood everywhere. And, like, I mean, I love that because we've been, like I said, I've been coming up here for my entire life. So however old I am, 32. I loved it immediately. Like, just before I even tasted the beer, I'm like, oh, I love this place. You know?
We even have some barking spiders that come out after a few beers. So be careful with your buddies.
Oh, good.
And the Adirondack barking spider is known to clear a couple of rooms. So, Cindy was from here, which is great. I grew up in Vermont. Vermont's a beautiful place.
A
really good brewing culture there, and a real passion for brewing. And also, you know, amongst the, you know, little convenience stores and restaurants and bars, really, you know, they do a great job at supporting local. We came over to New York. New York is just kind of getting into it, you know, upstate. They're waking up and go, wow, you know, that brewery next door to me, they make actually pretty good beer.
See, I feel like you got, like, up here is way more advanced than, like, the city. The city's beer, to me, is, like, it's slow, like, very slow to get into, like, beer.
It's coming aggressively. You know, Park Slope's got a bunch of breweries. Brooklyn, I mean, there's just a ton of stuff going on.
Now they're coming.
And again, when I talk about all these breweries opening in the state, a lot of it had to do with permitting. It was just, you know, does somebody want to spend a year or two working on permitting? I got to give the state government credit. They opened up the doors and they said, we're going to make this. You know, these are good small town businesses. New York City has the problem of rents and things.
Yeah,
but, you know, the thing is, they're making some great beer. And I got to give the shout out to New Yorkers, upstate, downstate, everywhere, for saying, hey, we've got great beer in New York, and drinking New York State beer. And and that's really, I think, what's changed in the last few years is, you know, the beer from California might be a little sexy at first. Hey, you know what? I've tried it.
And right.
I think every brewery outside of New York State has woken up and said, oh, there's New York State. Let's go sell beer there. And they come in and they dump their beer in the market. And, you know, we all try it. Okay, you know. But New Yorkers are doing what Vermonters and Californians and everybody else do. the idea of going to your local brewery, getting really fresh beer, which is not unlike Europe. Every town has its own little brewery.
Well, and I was going to say, like, if you read, you know, read books on, you know, how prior to the big world wars, you know, every town had its brewery because, one, you couldn't cold ship anything. Two, like, they brewed it there, and that's where people would go to congregate. War came, men went away, you know, the metal went away, and then in comes, you know, like, the big boys, and that was it for a long time. And then, you know, you said, like, 97, like, that's kind of like the, like, right around when it started to wake up, I guess. Like, would you have, like, Sierra and Sam?
There were a bunch. You know, homebrewing in the 80s was interesting because there were some really great little breweries, you know. And quite honestly, now they're big breweries. You know, there was, you know, some of these guys like Otter Creek and Harpoon and Long Trail, Catamount were in Vermont. Boston had Harpoon, Shipyard. You know, there were guys, you know, like Ken Grossman and Sierra. You know, they were all like going and just welding up some stainless and like basically doing what I was doing on homebrewing and just putting stuff together. And you know what? If it tasted good, it was good. And they went out to market and a lot of, you know, hats off to those guys because they really carved it out. And that was in the 80s. Mm. And then it kind of was like, okay, you know, it did its thing. In the 90s, it kind of bubbled a little bit and then kind of died out as the big guys came in. And, you know, and really right now it's fun because I think the consumers are so educated on what is great beer. And they're recognizing that fresh, locally made, you know, non-sterile filter, non-chemical, non-pasteurized beer that's, you know, an IPA that's 2 or 3 weeks old. Man, it's like fresh lettuce. You can't get that. You can't get that with old lettuce. You know, so it really does make a difference.
Like one of my favorite stories, Sam from Dogfish. I read his book, and like when he was first starting the brew, he tried to continually hop his beer, but he didn't know how to do it. So he took a electric football. You remember those things, electric football, and he put hops on top of it, so it would shake, and basically like it was slanted slightly. So for the hour, it would just slowly drop hops in for 60 minutes.
One of the smartest, nicest guys in our industry, and
love that guy.
Yeah, now one of my favorite quotes from him is, you know, I'm trying to keep the industry, you know, 95%. I'm not sure if I can say this on a.
You can say whatever you want.
That, you know, so Sam, don't give me a hard time for saying it, but it's one of my favorite quotes from you. You know, trying to keep our industry 95% asshole free. And it is. We're just a bunch of guys. We're welding up some stuff. We're mixing a few ingredients. And if it comes out great, hey, you know, let us know and thank us. And if it doesn't come out great, hey, let us know and, you know.
Try again.
Try again tomorrow, you know. So we're always experimenting and having a lot of fun with it. And he's really a great ambassador for craft and the philosophy of real, true craft beer.
Yeah, he's like one. Like, I met him in the Dogfish. Like, I was sitting next to him all the time. I'm like, oh, it's Sam. Like, and just said hi to him. Like, but, like, I really like his books. I like his work, you know. Like, and that's – he was, like, really the one that opened the floodgates for me into craft beer. Like, before, it was, like, I liked Guinness. I liked Sam M. And then I found Dogfish Head. And I was like, whoa. And like, it opened the world to me. And now it's, like – you know, if I go out with my girlfriend to a town we've never been to, the first thing we do is I check what breweries are around. Yep. It's a great way to see a city. It's a great way to usually those are the guys you can talk to find out what to do around there. You can always, you know?
And I'm the same way. I go, I travel, you know, and I get out and you go to the local brewery and, you know, and it's just, you know, the bartender there's a passion because we make the products, you know, and everybody that works at them is really into, you know, to what's going on. And, you know, I was last year I was out in Bend, Oregon, went to Deschutes and, you know, and even the staff that's there that's been there for 20 years is just really passionate about not just their beer, but every other brewery that was in Bend, Oregon. And, you know, really neat to see. And I think it's just unique in our industry. And I got to tell you, I hope it stays that way. And, you know, the energy that, you know, some of these guys have in our industry, hopefully it just continues.
I mean, I was talking to another brewery last week, and we were actually talking how, because he had like three breweries move in, and they're all maybe 3 miles away from each other, and how it's actually like it's a good thing because people come, all these beer guys come, and they want, hey, you know, I don't want to travel an hour just to try one, but there's three that come and check them all out. You know, it brings in a lot of people to the area.
Yeah.
So it's pretty cool. It's almost like, yeah, you want to be the best, of course.
Yeah.
But it's also this, every brewer I've talked to or someone who's worked at a brewery is this awesome community, it seems. At least all the good ones I like. Like, it all seems like they'd have stories about borrowing hops from the brewery down the street when they didn't have it, or yeast, or they help each other out. They do events together. Yeah, like, even you guys with the Oktoberfest, which
great time.
I would highly recommend coming. We're going to try to get out there again this year. But it's, I don't know, what, 20 different breweries probably?
Yeah, all of our friends, all of our neighbors. We do it the weekend after Columbus Day so we can all, like, actually drink some beer together and relax. Mm-hmm. Where the fall's a busy season. And, you know, we get, you know, right now there's an explosion of new breweries. And, I, you know, these new breweries, hey, listen, have some reverence for the guys that are, have been around. And it's always funny because before they open, you know, they're going to, I don't know, make this magic elixir that's the best beer ever and take over the world and be, you know, be the next Sam or the next Ken Grossman
Jim
or the
Koch.
Next, you know, Jim Koch. And, you know, and I always tell them, listen, you know, maybe you will. God bless you if you do. Congratulations. But if you're not, that's okay. Just make really great beer, whatever you
that's
do.
It.
And have a reverence for the guys that are around you. Oh, yeah, yeah. There's always a little kind of the new guy on the block. I know more than the guys that have been around for 5, 10, 15, 20 years.
Right.
And I always, you know, a year or two into it, there's a kind of a mutual respect. If they're making great liquid, you know, they come back around, you know, and we're all, you know, there's a brotherhood there. And I don't think it's, you know, any new sports team probably experiences that new rookie of the year that came yeah. on, or, you know, the new band member comes, you know. And so I think every industry has that a little bit. And I always tell the old guys, you know, or even customers that go out, oh, I went to the new brewery. They just opened last week, you know, and they always want to tell me about the beer. You know, I'm always like, time out. Like, just give them 6 months. Give them a year.
Right.
Let them work it out. You know, that's not easy making beer. Have some reverence for the fact that they got open. You know, going through the TTB, going through your state SLA,
right.
your local zoning department, you know, the neighbors that don't think breweries are good. I mean, getting through that 2 or 3 year process, getting built and getting open is an incredible feat for anybody. Cut them a little slack, cheer them on,
yeah.
thank them for opening up, and then come back in a year and try some more of their beer.
Yeah, I think it's great, too. Like, not only does it bring community to drink, but it also, at least in like New Jersey, it takes a lot of these old buildings that were nothing or that were out of business, and it turns them into these hubs, you know, for people to come and enjoy. And you get that, I think, when like politicians and stuff like that think of, they get this stigmatism, like people go there and get loaded and, you know, all day. It's just a bad. But every brew you go to is usually like a bunch of people just hanging out and having a beer and, you know, like I think it's above that or
we respect,
below
you know,
it. I don't know.
Yeah, I think brewers respect their product so much. The idea of just like getting people hammered on what I make is like disrespectful to what we do. And we just don't want to do that.
Right.
You know, there's a real reverence for it. And you know what we really just want, hey, why don't you have one or two and really enjoy it? You know, and I think right now there's a lot of lower alcohol beers getting made by brewers, which are fantastic.
Lots
just because we want you to enjoy what we're doing. And I think the politicians are starting to realize that. You know, local planning boards are looking, saying, hey, you know what? While we put a brewery out in that little part of town that there was nothing going on.
That old factory there.
And before we knew it, there's a little bakery that opened up next door. There's a little French restaurant. There's, you know, hey, wait a minute.
Food
you know,
trucks come to some breweries that can't.
You know, there's our, you know, it's tax base. And now all of a sudden, this little area of town that might have been a little rough is now like kind of a hip, cool spot to go hang out. And I think as communities look at that as an opportunity, we're seeing some neat stuff happening. And I really do think breweries are good for, you know, good for these areas.
Absolutely. Everywhere, I think, you know, and it also like it creates jobs. One, you know, it creates community. Like we said, a lot of different things. But let's talk a little about your beer. What was the first like beer you guys like sold regularly? Like the was it Bear Naked or was
I think,
it?
You know, we as a philosophy, if they're you know, I think every brewer kind of has this idea of what you know is the ultimate beer and. You know, for me, you know, I like, and I think for living in Europe for a while, I have this real love and respect for balance in beer.
Where'd you live?
I lived all over the place. Actually, it's kind of a crazy story. I went over there after, you know, going to school for, you know, engineering, went over there, and I hitchhiked through 21 countries.
That's awesome.
I could have taken the bus. It probably would have been a lot cheaper sometimes. And, you know, there's a few times, like in France, I'd get stuck in France at the side of the road for 3 days. And some guy would, like, drive by, you know, on his way to work and on his way home. And eventually that guy was like, hey, why don't you come home to my house for dinner tonight? I'll let you sleep in the barn. All right, great. Hey, can you give me a ride out of this town? Because I think I'm going to live here if I don't get a ride. Ah, you know, you're a fun guy. And he'd
That's
take
great.
Me down the road. But I fell in love with just balance, you know, where you can have this amazing amount of hops IPAs, for example. But boy, where's the malt behind it? Give me some body. Give me some balance. And I think as consumers are getting more aware of that, you know, it's not just, hey, I want to get throttled with, you know, some 12% alcohol beer. I want a nice balance. I want drinkability. So that's kind of our core philosophy. I also not a big fan of the asshole, not a big fan of weird stuff.
Right.
But I also love malt, you know, so I think in the world of hops, to hide malt and hide all those neat flavors that can evolve with it, you know, sort of a loss to the consumer. You know, you bought the beer, it's got hops, it's got malt, you know, let's try to find a balance. So our beer, philosophically, we're looking for that. Our balance has always been there.
Right.
And almost any beer that we're making, you know, you should taste the malt, you should taste the hops, whether it's a malty beer or a hoppy beer. So we're doing a lot of that.
Yeah, and they go together, you know.
Yeah, they do. And I think it's really neat as consumers get more into it. There's sort of a kind of a quiet revolution with malt. Like, people are like, hey, yeah, you know, I kind of like that malty beer you got. Is it okay if is that cool to drink it? Because it's not an IPA. Yeah, man, go, you know, celebrate. Or Fat Scotsman's a beer that I had. I lived up in Scotland one summer, and it was a 120 shilling beer. It took me like 3 years to actually figure out how to make it. You know, this was 12, 13 years ago. And people love that beer. You know, it's just a nice, malty, cool beer with this great, soft, Scottish kind of water profile. So
like, when you opened, what was Bare Naked around?
No, Bare Naked evolved from some recipes. You know, I had some homebrew recipes. We started with some copper ales back in the day. You know, and I partnered with a friend of mine, Paul McElhane, great brewer. And, you know, was like, hey, Paul, give me some ideas on some malt bills that are different, that aren't being used. And, you know, he's a great malt brewer, you know, really loves malt. And I was looking for kind of some complex malt. And so he threw out some great ideas, and we kind of evolved with that. And I think all great beers kind of evolve, you know, as they go on, and, you know, may even change a little, you know, over the 16 years we've been brewing that beer. And it's funny because it's not, you know, this sexy triple quad thing, you know, from Belgium or something. Just a drinkable beer. I'll be honest, a slice of pizza, wood-fired pizza with that beer, set me up. That's what I love. You know.
So, like, how many beers is this place now able to pour at one time?
We try to limit it on draft to 12 beers, and then we have about 3 or 4 other bottled products that are on. Reason is, if you're, you know, little shout out to all those poor servers that work at bars that have like 100 beers on draft, and everybody goes, well, what do you have on draft? And the poor server's like, oh my God. And also because we are really aggressive about fresh beer. We date code all our products. Our t-shirts on the back say, ale so fresh you want to slap it. Nope. Fresh beer's just better. I don't want to have 50 old beers sitting on draft. So we have 12. So we rotate those constantly.
It's plenty.
So you come in this week, you come in next week, there's going to be a couple of standbys, and then, you know, things are just constantly rotating.
So in the last, I don't know how many years now, but how long have you been, I've seen your packaging and you're out there now in stores, when I was 5 years? Am I wrong?
Yeah, we've been packaging for about 8 or 9 years. Probably one of the more challenging things that any small brewery does is packaging.
Yeah.
And because we brew and package 100% of our own product on site. We don't contract. We don't, you know, brewing's a ton of fun. Why let somebody else do it is kind of my attitude.
Yep.
You know, and the challenges of doing it when you can, hit that bottle that is perfect. Really cool bit of satisfaction for us.
So what's in the future as far as distribution? Are you trying to get further into Jersey or just trying to keep it where it is right now?
You know, we're very organic about our growth. You know, we really, you know, we've got some great distributors that we work with here in New York. You know, they like us, are small, family-owned operations. They know their customers. And so it's really, you know, I want to make sure that I take care of them and I respect what they do for us and not leave them short because I opened up 5 states and I'm undercapitalized and I run out of beer. And, you know, but just to really kind of grow slowly, you know, I think is a key thing. And I know that's a different model than everybody else who's hoping to grow really fast and maybe some investment guy will come along and pay you millions of dollars. I would kind of be bummed because then I wouldn't know what to do, and I love making beer, and I'm still amazed with the process. And I enjoy the relationships that I have with the retailers and the distributors.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, are you still involved in the brewing as much? You're still...
I love brewing. Yeah. You know, it's just one of those things when all the the science and the art and the and part of it's voodoo. Yep. You know, wow, that came out great. Yep. You know, what did we do this time that worked? And to me, that's fascinating. And seeking that alpha every day. And I don't think any brewer nails it every time. And if they do, well, God bless you. You're amazing. But you're always trying to get there, and you're always improving. And as consumers get better at knowing good beer from bad, I love the challenge. You know, it really is a lot of fun.
So do you have your hands on every part of the business? Yeah.
Yeah, everything. I just love, you know, and the marketing and the beer. And I mean, it's just a great job.
Now, let's talk some of the events here. Like I told you, when I really fell in love with this place, it was basically Oktoberfest. I came up. I said, okay, I'll buy tickets. Check it out.
Something to do.
Check it out. Yeah, yeah. And then, you know, like first things first, I see you and your leader, Hosen, or whatever you want to call it. And
I'm
like,
I'm a 6 foot three garden gnome, so if anybody can get a visual over the radio on that one, you know. So it's long-legged.
So I think I've been to 5 or 6 of them, something like that. And we've seen kazoo parades. I've seen keg toss, throwing chickens into a barrel.
Oh, yeah.
There was a barrel dance, like a parade kind of that came out. So,
you know, I got to tell you, we have a busy summer months. We're right up here in Lake George, and as Lake George's brewery, you know, we're busy in the summer months. It's just the way it is. But in the off season, we have a lot of fun. We do these crazy events, and we have a lot of fun staff. And to be honest, the customers, I call them customers, they're more like family to us. They have a lot of fun with us, and they're great people. So we do these different events, I guess because you do them, but also because we have a lot of fun doing them. And
it's a blast.
So, you know, we do this Oktoberfest, and it's a fundraiser event. Every year we do a different charity. This year it's the Adirondack Mountain Club.
Okay.
Great organization. They're like literally a quarter mile from us. They, you know, build trails. They do a lot of stuff. And what we do is we basically, you know, all my, you know, a lot of brewery friends of mine show up. You know, we get them hotel rooms. We drink a lot of beer together. A lot of them, you know, donate the beer, come up and do it. We donate all the profits. 100% of the profits
that's
go
great.
Right to it. My staff gets paid, and that's about it. And they get the rest of the money. Last year, we donated almost $10,000 to a local charity here
one
in
day.
Adirondacks. Mm-hmm. One day. Yep. So thank you for coming and supporting that. But every year, we like to just kind of add some crazy stuff. So This is like, you know, you're going to hear this for the first time.
Top secret.
I've got a really crazy good friend, Tommy Keegan, Keegan's Ales down in the Hudson Valley in Kingston. Mm-hmm. Fun guy, great brewer. He's been at it a long time since the, you know, like 2001. And he does a lot of fun events too. He's got this thing called Chicken Shit Bingo.
Chicken shit bingo.
So
okay.
We've got a friend who's got a hungry chicken, and she's going to bring the chicken over. We're going to put it in a little pen, and we're going to have chicken. We're going to have numbers on the little squares on the floor of the chicken shit bingo. And as every time the chicken goes around, you buy a card for $5.
Okay.
And the $5 goes to the charity.
Right.
And every time the chicken day takes care of business, we're going to yell out the number. You cross off your square, and then it's a 50-50. You get half the money if you win. So every year we got to add some new stuff. Last year we had our Funky Ice Fest, which was a blast. You bring your afros. It's all 70s. We get vinyl records. Get a DJ outside. All ice bars. The Sagamore Resort does one. You know, sell out. If you're ever around in January, that is one of the funnest things to do. You can go to the Sagamore, do their thing, come here. And we kind of do it a little different. We work with a lot of our local distilleries and wineries and get their spirits and make some fun stuff. We got a drink luge. Great thing to do in January. Get out of the house. Come on up for that one. So every year we got our barrel fest. Festival of barrels. You know, everything has to be in a barrel. This isn't a beer fest. It's barrel fest.
Okay.
And you bring your rare barreled beers. And we got a couple wineries that come. We even have some cigar companies because
nice.
Their stuff is aged in wood. And, you know, they bring those up. So we got cigars, fireworks. Now, that's an outdoor event, so it's not for the meek. You know, it's not for the kid that just wants to come and drink beer. Now, you got to really love barreled beers. And that one's outside. Rain. One year it was 30 below zero. One year it snowed. We had a foot of snow. One year it was 70 degrees. Last year was actually gorgeous. It was like 25. Beautiful, beautiful afternoon. So, but we love doing these fun events in the off season. So, you know, check our calendar, website. You know, we got a lot of stuff going on.
Okay. I wanted to interrupt this episode because right after the episode aired, I realized I forgot to talk about something. I thought it was a pretty funny story. So I want to share it with you and kind of just... input it right into the episode here. So I have been going to the Oktoberfest, which you heard us talk about a little bit, almost every year. I try to get up there every year, and it's a great time. And one of the events is the keg toss. Now, everybody asks me, hey, that's an empty keg. No, it's a full keg. It's like 165 pounds. It's really, really freaking heavy. Like, the only way to really get it up is you got to do, like, a deadlift kind of thing and, like, almost like a clean and jerk and get it on your shoulder and then kind of push it off. So it's a great time because a lot of guys get up there. They think they can lift the keg. They try to do, like, a spinning attempt, and they miss it, and then they drop it 2 feet. Okay, some guys just start spinning and they almost fall down. And it's a great time; everybody's watching you, so there's even more pressure. There's actually a girls' keg toss too, where they throw like a smaller one, like an empty sixtal, I believe. But it's a good time. So a few years back, I'm at the Oktoberfest and I go somewhere in the middle of the pack and I lift the keg. I got my German hat on. I got my little vest that they gave me on, having a great time, probably 10 beers deep, but lift the keg up, okay, I throw it, and I think I'm in first place. I might have been in first or second place. I don't want to tell you I'm in first. And it was a pretty good throw. I mean, you're throwing these things. If you're throwing them, I don't know, like, you know, 7-8 feet, I would think is a good throw. I don't really know, but you throw them on these boards, they make a big noise, they tape off, you know, where you landed. So I'm like, I really got a shot. And I don't remember if there's a first place prize or not, but it's more of like a manhood kind of thing. Like, you want to win that. So I think I'm going good. The numbers are dwindling down. There's only a few more guys to go. And we're all either probably close to one another, or I might even be in first, you know, who knows. And then out of the back comes this big, like, burly guy that looks like he'd be straight out of, like, Wisconsin, you know, just one of those big guy, not particularly Jack, just big and stocky and huge. He comes out in, like, his chef pants, okay, and right away I said to myself, this guy's gonna win, okay, and as I was talking, after this podcast was complete, it turns out he was the chef, and he wasn't even supposed to really participate, and he came out, and he was like, okay, let me throw the keg. So not only does he pick up the keg with ease, okay, he picks it up and he launches it probably 4 or 5 feet further than anybody else. And then he just kind of like disappears, you know, gets his applause and like disappears into the abyss. And he just won the keg toss like it was nothing. Like, he was genetically designed to pick kegs up and throw them, okay? Like, you know, like his ancestors must have been like, you know, like, they probably worked with rocks, you know, like masons and stuff like that, lifting boulders, okay? If maybe his, you know, long ancestors helped build, like, the Colosseum, and they put pillars on their backs, or, like, maybe, who knows, maybe they're of Mexican heritage, and they helped build some of the Aztec pyramids and things like that, or maybe they're Egyptian, okay? I don't know, but something in that man's bloodline, he is perfectly designed to throw kegs. You know how, like, guys look like point guards, or you go, hey, that guy would be a perfect, you know, small forward just by body type. You know, some guys look good as a catcher. You just kind of know. This guy, he looks like he just came out of the womb ready to launch beer. Okay. But all in all, it is a great time, and I highly suggest visiting the Adirondack Brewery if you're up in that area. Really, it's only took about a three-and-a-half-hour drive. From North Jersey, so yeah, get on up there. Now back to the podcast. You definitely got a lot of stuff going on. What about the distillery in the works? Read an article on that. That sounds definitely exciting.
You know, in being in Lake George, you know, in the winter months, there's not a lot going on up here. It's a little quiet. Yeah, you know, so we have some actual surplus capacity, and I. You know, a guy that I used to buy equipment from said, you know, his name was Ian Day, good guy, he's a Canadian guy. He said, why don't you make whiskey? This was probably 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. We are the first, you know, brewery, brew pub to actually open a distillery in New York. Now, the problem is, being the first, it just takes a while.
Right.
And, you know, the state government was very supportive of it. But the problem was, every time we went to do it, we had to actually change the law, you know, and go through and get the law changed in the SLA and work with them. And so we get that law changed. Oh, wait a minute. No, we got to change another law. And we kept having to go through this. So it took us about 4 to 5 years just to work through the legal process to, in New York State, to actually own 2 production facilities.
Okay.
You're really only allowed to own one and have any retail stuff. So it was a little bit involved. The cool part is that malt whiskey is actually made from beer. So any with Scotch lovers out there, it's actually made from beer.
Okay.
And we've been working with a friend of ours since 2013 who's a distiller, Derek Grott at Harvest Spirits. He makes some great products. He kind of was like, hey, John, let's try this. So we tried it and used his still. We came up. We've won 2 silver medals nationally for our efforts. And the idea that I can take malt that I love and take it to a different level. You know, I guess it's a little like the New Testament. You know, it's sort of got some of the same ideas in it, but it's a little different.
The sequel.
And, you know, trying to tie whiskey and beer in with the New Testament is kind of a twist on it. But it's just different. You know, it's to be able to take those cool malt flavors that you get with Munich malts or whatever and actually put them into, you know, whiskey. The hard part for me personally is I'm kind of impatient. So, the idea that I got to wait, I got to wait 2 years to find out if I actually did this right?
Yeah.
You're kidding me. You know,
now, is that going across the street there?
Yeah, we were able to purchase a piece of property next to us a couple years ago, and it's about 4 acres, and it's it's going to become our kind of Adirondack craft beverage campus. You know, we're hoping to work with some local wineries, awesome. Some other breweries, you know, different things, and kind of create kind of a neat space for visitors to come, and also these fun events that we do to have this really cool event space.
And are the spirits going to be called Adirondack Brewery, or
no,
they have a different name?
No, we didn't want everybody to think, oh, well, yeah, that's Adirondack Brewery stuff, you know, which is fine. We kind of wanted its own entity. So we're using the name High Peaks Distilling.
High Peaks.
And, and quite honestly, anyone that's ever traveled in Scotland, if they've been up into parts of the Adirondacks, you know, if it was all grass instead of trees, it looks a lot like the highlands of Scotland.
Nice.
And really, quite honestly, you know, they've got mountains just like our size mountains. They've got lakes and fjords formed during the Ice Age. It does have a lot of similarities. And we, similar to Scotland, our area right here in Lake George has some of the best water in New York State. And it's phenomenal water to make
beer.
Like a Scotch-style whiskey with. So we're very blessed with what we've got here.
Yeah, I mean, that's awesome. It's just awesome to see you guys keep growing and trying different things. And every time I come up, there's different beers and bottles and more, you know, barrel age.
Yeah.
I just saw the red ale downstairs and the rum barrels, I think it was.
Yep,
I
we mean, got some rum barrels.
That one up
we've got another building that we inoculate beer in to create our sours. So we've got about 70 different, 70 barrels worth of sour beers going at all times, which has been a lot of fun for us.
Yeah,
to actually
big.
Take those, those beer spoilers, lacto and PDO and Brettanomyces, and actually inoculate beer with them intentionally. That's been a lot of fun and some really amazing stuff coming out of that. We had a fun beer this summer called Cucumber Sour. Sour beer with cucumbers in it. We're doing a blackberry sour. And then for the winter months, a cucumber or a cranberry sour. So some really neat stuff on that side. And then we've got our barrel-aged stuff. So some neat things going on.
Tell me about the Moose Whiz saga, I guess you can call it. what happened then? Now, Moose Whiz is your root beer that you make here.
We've about 16 years ago, a lot of the kids that came to the brew pub were a very family-friendly resort area. So, a lot of kids wanted something, and I grew up with Shirley Temples, which are kind of boring nowadays because every restaurant's got them. So we came up with this root beer, and it's an all-cane root beer, all-cane sugar root beer, and we... I'm not a big fan of vanilla.
Right.
In root beer, a lot of, root beers have a lot of vanilla. But when I found out that wintergreen, and I always loved wintergreen lifesavers, wintergreen was one of the oils, the essential oils that goes into root beer. So I made a root beer that had a little more wintergreen, and it was excellent. And a little less vanilla, a little more wintergreen, cut back on the sugar a little bit. And it makes if anyone that drinks martinis, if you want a root beer martini, vanilla vodka, a little bit of our Moose Whiz, phenomenal stuff. I went to some of my staff, it was probably nine years ago now, and I said, guys, we got to come up with a good name for this. And one of them, he's a crack up, Caleb. He's like, hey, how about, I had this shirt when I was a kid and it said Bear Whiz on it. And we've got another little tap room up the street called the Moose Tooth Grill. And Steph Hayes was like, hey, how about we call it like just Moose Whiz, like after the restaurant? Hey, great, great idea, you know. So we started calling it that, sold it, and then, you know, there's a brewery up in Canada that, you know, quite honestly, a lot of people don't really know a lot about, called Moosehead. And Moosehead decided that people were going to mix these two products up somehow, and that, you know, and I was kind of like, I don't think so, guys. But, you know, I'm in a brown bottle, and it's non-alcoholic and whatever. I, the whole thing is really kind of sad. And I got to tell you, I'm kind of an independent SOB. And, yep. You know, I live in America, the land of the free, I guess, maybe. And so we're trying to kind of work it out, but they just don't. You know, they really think that they own the Moose.
So it's still ongoing.
It's still ongoing. In a couple of weeks, we're, end of August, we're going to go to court on that. And which is a little bit weird because I've never actually had to go to federal Supreme Court.
Over Moose Whiz.
Over root beer. which is kind of, anyone that, you know, change.org is out there, you know, we're trying to convince them that, you know, work with us a little bit, and we're not out to make, we're not out to take over the world with it. We don't make an alcoholic version of it. No one's ever mixed it up in the 8 years we've made it. But it's kind of a waste of money, a waste of my time. But like I said, I'm sort of an independent guy that believes that the land of the free, the moose are free here too. So any hashtaggers out there, you know, hashtag free the moose.
Free the moose. I was going to say,
and
I
I'll
saw
tell
that.
You, if you ever come to the Adirondacks, the moose up here, they're wily, they're free. And if they want to walk across the road, God bless them, they're walking across the road. You better stop your car. So I have a little bit of that personality.
So that's hashtag free the moose. Free the moose. So we're coming up towards the end here. What is this, 17 years open?
17 years, 1999.
17 years open. What have you either learned about yourself or learned about running a business? Like, what stands out most to you as far as, like, you're obviously successful. You obviously still have goals and things that you're trying to do. Like, what have you learned about yourself, though, through this whole process?
It's just a drive to get better every day. If I can improve 1% every day, it'd be amazing.
Right.
1% doesn't sound like a lot, but for me to wake up tomorrow and just do the same thing I did today, no way. And I tell my staff that every day. You guys, hey, you know what? Hey, John, wow, there's a lot of new breweries opening up. Or, hey, John, this big brewery from Colorado is going to come in with millions of dollars in marketing money and take over the world in New York State. And my attitude is, hey, whatever. Let's just make better beer than them, and make better and, like, you come into the restaurant, and I'm not saying we're perfect. We're not. But, hey, waitstaff, just be a little friendlier.
Right.
Make these people your friends and enjoy it. So always trying to do better with that. And I'm blessed to work with, really, both in the brewery and in the restaurant, some of the best, people in my area, flat out.
So you still love it?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I don't work, 80, 90 hours a week because I hate it.
Yep.
No, I got one of the best jobs in the world, flat out. Yeah, a lot of fun.
Anything in the future that people should be looking forward to, other than the Oktoberfest we talked to? Any beers that are coming out that we should keep our eye on?
Yeah, we're just like the whiskey thing's exciting. Our sours are just really amazing beers, And I think, there's always that, hey, well, this new brewery opened up and they're making funky stuff. They must be, better. And, it's okay. I get it, but it's a little bit like music, quite honestly, to go put on some good, Zeppelin 1.
Right.
Wow, it just still sounds great. And I think that's kind of where our brewery is, man. We're just still making great beer. And, and to go back to some of those greatest hits and just enjoy our IPA, we've been making that beer for 15 years.
Right.
And it's still rocking.
I mean, you guys, like I said, you do little improvement too, like the fire pits outside. Like, it seems like something's always changing a little bit here, which is awesome. Like, yeah. I think that's what's cool about it.
I got to give you a reason to come back next summer.
Yeah, exactly. But if people want to check out the brewery, or maybe they hear this and send you a message or check you out, where can they go?
Easiest thing to do. All the emails go directly to me, adkbrewery.com. We're right here in Lake George. If you're coming up for the Oktoberfest, get a hotel room. It's a beautiful weekend to come up. It's quiet.
It
the
is.
Lake's gorgeous. You can go to LakeGeorgeOktoberfest.com and really come visit us. We're open year round. And in the winter, it's kind of fun. It's sort of like a cozy little cabin.
Yeah.
And go walk around the lake in the day, come over here for a beer at night, and enjoy a beautiful area. I'm blessed where we live.
Absolutely. John, thanks so much for having us. Well, I guess it's just me today, but for having, I guess, for having. Thank you so much for letting me have you on the podcast and letting us come here and talk for a few minutes. And I guess that brings us to the end here.
No, that's great. Everybody in podcast world, thanks for listening.
Podcast, blog world, whatever. All right, guys, I'm Scott Brennan. Life is funny. Laugh at it. Keep the wind at you.